Man, Wheeler's mad at a lot of people.
Who am I mad at now?
Yeah. I'm just looking at the Google Doc. You're mad at Tom Brady.
Yeah, I hate him.
Mad at Chapel Roan.
I don't know if I'm mad at Chapel Roan.
I'm mad at Chapel Roan.
I'm a little annoyed at Chapel Roan, though. You know the story?
Too.
So she said that fame is, as she put it, like an abusive husband. And I would argue a couple things. One, I wouldn't compare those two things. I think that's a bit much. But also, you cannot be famous. You can stop being famous. You can stop doing the things that you're doing that make you famous. You can just not be that anymore. You can not do shows. You can not do public. You can just go be a normal person. Fame can be terrible, but it's a thing you're choosing to do.
I have some audio that's relevant to this. This is her from about a month ago on TikTok. If we want to listen to it, or else I can just describe it to you.
We should probably introduce who she is to the audience because I barely know.
All right. She is the new the newest pop star du jour. She is a very, very big deal pop star right now. She's also very, very young. I think she's like 24 or 25, something like that. And so she's gotten a lot of love for being this, like, you know, no filter, tell it like it is. But she's also upset a lot of people that way, namely her fans, like in this TikTok that I have audio of, where she's basically complaining about her fans coming up to her and trying to talk to her. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
I need you to answer questions. Just answer my questions for a second. If you saw a random woman on the street, would you yell at her from the car window? Would you harass her in public? Would you go up to a random lady and say, can I get a photo with you? And she's like, no, what the f-? And then you get mad at this random lady? Would you be offended if she says no to your time because she has her own time? Would you stalk her family? Would you follow her around? Would you try to dissect her life and bully her online? This is a lady you don't know. And she doesn't know you at all. Would you assume that she's a good person? Assume she's a bad person? Would you assume everything you read about her online is true? Just think about that for a second, okay?
Yeah, see, some of those things are really not okay. Like terrible, like stalking someone's family or following them around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's crazy to ask a famous person for a picture or an autograph, but you should be more than happy to accept no for an answer,
mm-hmm.
right? If somebody says no, you should be like, okay, have a good day, appreciate it, still love your work or whatever. I think some of this is generational and age. She's very young, does not have a lot of experience in the world. I'm sure a lot of this is happening very fast, but you and I both, Dave, have been around really famous people, and
you are really famous people.
No, nothing like that. Nothing. But like, mine is more sports related, and I have seen it from the time I was in college. People asking for autographs, people that want you to do this, want you to do that, and I see how that's handled. Some people handle it poorly. Some people handle it really well. On both sides, both the famous person side, the athlete side, and the fan side. But to argue that this, to say that people should never come up to you or talk to you or want your autograph, that is the very thing that makes you what you are. It's why you have the money that you do. It's why you are the big star that you are and you get to go on stage and perform, is because people care about you. You have to accept that trade-off. Because it is the price of fame.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And if
agreed.
You don't want to be famous, that's cool too. But yeah, you can stop doing it.
And you can. So I've had a couple stalkers over the 24 years. But in general, 99.9% of people who I've met at events or just out at a restaurant or Snooks have been super, super cool.
Yes.
Like the people we met at Funny Bone the other night.
Yeah, they were awesome.
But I have always looked at it that at minimum, if you listen to my show and you support the show, you have helped me support my kids. And if we run into each other at Schnucks and you want to talk, you want to get a picture, right on. Like, it's the least I can do. This is going to sound very back patty and self-serving, but it happens to be true. I've known so many celebrities and known them close up. And one thing I noticed They love the crowd. They don't love the people in the crowd.
Individually. Like,
yes.
In an individual one-on-one setting.
10, 20,000 people there to see them is impactful to them.
Yeah.
They love it. They put on a show for that single entity called the crowd. But any individual among the crowd, they couldn't care less about.
Yeah.
And I've always been the opposite.
Yeah.
And that this is the thing that's like, oh, okay, tell us more about how you're great, Dave. But when we do something, for like when we did the Sheldon with 750 people, mm-hmm. I couldn't wait till the show is over to meet everyone, to like look someone in the eye, shake their hand. Hey, nice to meet you. You've been listening for 15 years. Here's your favorite memory. Here's your favorite cast member. I enjoy that way more than just like the faceless crowd.
Yeah. And I, in
but
my,
then again, I'm not that famous.
Yeah, right. But I mean, in my experience, not with myself, because I'm this stuff is not relevant to me. I'm not famous. But when I watch an athlete, some of them are exactly what you described. They don't want to do the, you know, the meet and greets and the handshake things, but they love performing in front of the crowd and doing that. There are others, though, that are what you're talking about. They love interacting with people. They love going over and signing autographs and trading stories and, you know, giving that little 10-year-old kid who's your biggest fan that experience because they remember that when they were kids. And I want to give Chapel Roan a little grace because of her age. Because maybe at 34 or 44, she'll see it a little differently. Mm-hmm. But she's conflating things that are clearly bad and problematic with things that are normal. Like, you don't put coming up to someone for a selfie up next to stalking your family. Those are not the same thing. Yes, if anybody's following you or they're stalking you, yes, that's terrible, bad criminal behavior. Someone asking you for an autograph is not weird or wrong or strange.
And if it is, you probably should stop being a celebrity.
Well, that's the point. You can choose to do something else if this is a turnoff to you.
It's an interesting thing that I feel like we've been seeing, which is why I initially pulled this audio in the first place a while back. I feel like we've been seeing it more and more from the newer generation, like the Gen Zers who are coming up and becoming popular or famous or whatever you'd want to call it. People who want it both ways. They want, like, I'm sure that Chapel Roan doesn't complain when she gets like a really nice table at a restaurant and free food, well, or when she gets
right.
when designers
she
send her free clothes.
Right. Would start complaining if people started ignoring her.
Right.
If she really did, for whatever reason, become persona non grata overnight, and no one was coming to her shows and no one was buying her songs, it would devastate her.
Taylor Swift wants to be the richest, most famous person in the world and have a private jet that she can fly, you know, to Paris for an afternoon and then fly back, but she doesn't want people going, hey, you're using an awful lot of carbon emissions to fly to Paris for 45 minutes and then fly back. That's they want it both ways. They want to be ultra famous, but also when it suits them, they want to just be able to slip under the radar and do it.
Which is understandable.
It's like, no, I get it. I get it, but it's just not.
We all want what we want.
It's just not reality. And to go on, and since we have these social media platforms now where we can go on and just impulsively make a complaining video where we go like, hey, don't come up to me if you see me and ask for a picture because I don't know you, like, and it just comes off as very like, okay, well,
yeah,
I'm a big fan.
And also I don't know what that's like. I've never been famous enough to not be able to walk down the street and have every person notice me, and it must be really annoying. But you also have to have some self-awareness that even if it is, you haven't been famous all that long. Remember how it would have sounded to you. Remember how would it have sounded
when
you
were 14
if
or
a famous 16. Person said like, yeah, just don't come up to me, don't talk to me, don't look me in the
like
eye,
like the person you idolized or the person you were a huge fan of. And look, I guarantee you Chapel Roan has people that were her favorites. Everybody is inspired by someone when you're coming up, especially in music, right? So if you had been talked to that way by someone you really admired or you were a big fan of, how would that have hit you? And that's why I think, again, I'm around professional athletes. The guys that are like that, I never want that kid, especially kids, to walk away from an interaction with a negative feeling, because I remember how it was good to me when I met this guy and this guy made me feel amazing. Yep. And I know it can, I'm sure it's even weirder. I want to be clear. We should probably also make this point. When you're a 24-year-old young woman, if you have like 30-year-old dudes that are really pushy, I get how that can be very, very, maybe even scary. I was going to say off-putting, but maybe even frightening, because some of these autograph like hounds are real jerks, and they're very pushy. They're very pushy, and that's why I want to give some grace. But I also think you're a grown person, and you can choose to not be in this situation if you want to. You know, there's a balance here.
It's also, I'm thinking of particular people who I'll share with you guys in the break, but there are people at like Ricky Horton's level who are really no more famous, who act like they are God's gift.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
You probably know who I mean.
I think.
And
I can think of a couple.
And then you've got Ricky, who is legitimately a nice human being.
Yeah.
Goes out of his way to be nice to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people on the same level who just view it a completely different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would also, I want to make sure I add on to this. I would also tell fans to not be jerks. Don't go to the person, and if they say no, give them attitude or whatever. Because every person is allowed to say no. They're allowed to be doing something else. They're allowed to not be comfortable with that. So while I would criticize the viewpoint that she's expressing there because it's too blanket of a thing and too woe is me because you're a famous 24-year-old pop star, your life's pretty good, I would also want the general public to be better than they are, too, because I have seen the other side of that, where a grown man will curse out a 22-year-old professessional athlete because he didn't sign a baseball for him. I
got everything. Doing a couple of pieces of audio.
Oh, yeah.
You want to share them?
Oh, yeah. That's the audio right there, David. Oh, yeah. It's the Kool-Aid man. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's just a bunch of sound clips of me going, oh, yeah, in different ways. I just thought it was cool. I thought you guys might want to hear them. Do you want to start with yours, Dave?
What is mine?
Yours is the story about the perp walking the kid.
Oh, this is the sheriff. I heard
down
this.
Yeah, Florida. Sheriff Chitwood found some kid with a bunch of guns who made some sort of terroristic threats, and he arrested him, and he perp walked him, and he videotaped him, and he put him in jail, and he showed the whole world and basically said that this is going to keep on happening.
The local sheriff says he is starting a new policy of posting video like this on social media.
Since parents, you don't want to raise your kids, I'm going to start raising them. Every time we make an arrest, your kid's photo is going to be put out there. And if I could do it, I'm going to perp walk your kid.
Sheriff Mike Chitwood of Volusia County, Florida, says the youngster threatened to commit a mass shooting at a school outside Daytona Beach. He had written a list of names and targets. He says it was all a joke, the sheriff says. First, the 11-year-old is handcuffed, then he's put in ankle shackles.
Do you have any questions? All right.
The sheriff says he was driven to this
General,
extraordinary
what do you think?
Step of allowing.
So what? And to be clear for everybody listening, he also said that they get like dozens of these threats a year now at schools, because this kid didn't do anything. He didn't show up with guns. He didn't shoot anybody. It was just a threat.
Yeah.
And these threats are happening all the time, and that's who he's talking about arresting. That not the people that are committing the actual crimes. Of course, you're going to arrest them, and they're, you know, that kind of thing. And then he also said that he's going to start perp walking parents when their kids are doing these things, and he's going to start arresting them where he can find that they contributed to it and they knew it. Boy, I'll tell you, I like the idea, especially of trying to hold parents accountable for their kids' behavior. Is it legal to do that to 11-year-olds?
Doesn't feel like it.
I mean, he's a sheriff.
No, I know, but I'm saying I think sheriffs can break the law, man.
I know, but I'm just saying, who's going to arrest him?
Because you look like nobody until a child is named in a court case, like publicly named, people in the media do not report it because you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to do that with a minor unless they're being tried as an adult, if I understand it correctly.
Well, that was that was the big controversy, right? Was that he showed the face of the
right.
child.
I don't know the laws in Florida. but I don't think that that's technically a legal thing to do.
What do you think about his line, if you parents aren't going to raise your kids, then I'll raise them?
I don't think that's raising the kid. I don't know if public humiliation of an 11-year-old who maybe doesn't even have a perfect grasp of what he's even threatening to do, because he's 11 years old, he's a baby, his brain is not fully formed yet. I think that...
Yeah, but this is a powerful... I'm not sure I care. Agree with the being put him on camera and stuff, but that's a powerful lesson right there, that your words and your thoughts and the things you say you're going to do have consequences.
I am fine with arresting. I am fine with perp walking. I'm fine with locking him in jail for overnight, a few hours, whatever. I think that's all fine. It's the public humiliation that concerns me, because what you're doing is you're taking a troubled kid, and we have seen that a lot of these things can be pushed by bullying and ridicule. I know that was a big thing with like the Columbine shooters. They felt very bullied. They felt very ridiculed at school. And I think that when you expose these kids and you expose this troubled 11-year-old to public humiliation, I think that is not going to stop. I think it might have the opposite effect that he's thinking it will, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think the part that is the questionable part is the putting the image out there on television and all of that.
Same.
I don't have any problem with the hard line, because, again, at some point, you have to know there are consequences, even if you think you're kidding.
So, some interesting things around the ballpark last night, Wheels?
Yeah, well, first of all, there's some buzz yesterday, because, and these things all kind of get tied together, right? And sometimes they're linked and sometimes they're not. It turns out to this time that they were pretty clearly linked. But some buzz yesterday at the ballpark, and Matt Pauly was hearing some of it as well, that last night could be Lance Lynn's last start. Mm-hmm. He kind of acknowledged that too. Like, mm-hmm. after the game, he's like, if that's your left, that's my last one, that's a good way to go out, because he was really good, man.
Remind me his history with the Cardinals.
So he was drafted by the Cardinals. You know, he was a rookie in 2011, pitching in the bullpen for the World Series winning team. Obviously spent the next 5-6 years with the Cardinals, left via free agency, and then came back this year. He's definitely a well-known and very much appreciated Cardinal, mm-hmm. right? He was brought back this year for some stability, for some of his... I'm trying to put this the right way, because I want this to be a compliment, because it is. For some of his competitive edge, right? Lance Lynn's a very competitive guy, and he's like subtly funny, good for a clubhouse kind of guy, and they obviously felt like they needed some of that this year. And that's one of the reasons, in addition to needing innings, they needed a starter. They also wanted that. They wanted his kind of personality, his kind of leadership, right? A little bit different vibe in the room. He's an edgy, aggressive guy, which I think fans like about him. I mean, you watch him, you know, he's always yelling into his glove, and, you know, he gets excited when he strikes people out. And all that's kind of why he was brought back in. But yesterday, 6 innings, 5 strikeouts, only allowed 1 run, did a really nice job. And today he's going on the injured list with a knee, and he had been on the injured list already with the knee problem, and came back, made these few starts, and was actually pretty good after coming back. But he probably came back, I'm just guessing, and maybe this will be acknowledged, but I'm guessing he came back sooner than he wanted to, or than he probably should have, because he wanted to help the team try to contend. And now that that's kind of falling by the wayside,
makes sense.
You can now say, all right, we got to shut this down, because it's a problem. And he went out with he went out with a great performance. And Michael McGreevy has been recalled from Memphis. And part of the clues that started getting pieced together was that McGreevy was scratched from his start yesterday. But that was before Lynn ever pitched, which is what kind of kickstarted some of the conversations.
Yeah.
So you'll probably see a couple of starts from McGreevy down the stretch, which is good. I mean, you want to see the younger guy, and nothing against Lance Lynn. You know, if he goes out the way he did last night, it's a great way to go out.
Chances that Lance Lynn pitches somewhere next year?
Oh, I'm sure he'll pitch somewhere. I don't see. I mean, it's not been perfect this year. He's obviously getting older. He's 37. There was a stretch early where he was really, really solid. And then there was the stretch before the knee injury where it was bad for a couple of months. But this last little bit here, these last 3 or 4 starts have been pretty good. I'm assuming somebody will sign him to pitch. I would imagine it'll be a team looking for his presence, right? That kind of veteran edginess kind of leadership.
Who else would you expect to maybe show up, and who might go away
between now and the end of the year? Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's much more. I keep wondering if they're going to bring Gorman back. You know, I mean, at some point here to get a put a good taste in his mouth going into the offseason. I don't know. His numbers in the minors have been better, but he's still striking out a lot. And that's the big thing. Like, his clear project for next year is to make more contact. He's got power, so if the ball is being put into play, they're going to be a large percentage of them that go over the fence, right?
How much time do players in general spend practicing hitting against real pitchers who can really
pitch?
Oh,
not much. Yeah, not much in the offseason. I mean, there are examples.
Doesn't it seem like that would help?
Yeah, but it's hard to find. Like, first of all, you're not going to find major league caliber pitching that's willing to throw you game competitive type stuff in the middle of the winter. You might find some people that are recently out of the game. You might find some guys that were, like, let's say, for example, minor leaguers that got released that are trying to get back in that might do that just to be like, hey, here's some video of me facing Nolan Gorman. Here's what my stuff looked like. But it's hard to find that. It's not that it can't happen. It's just very difficult to find anybody. And again, those would be minor leaguers. You're not going to find very many major league caliber guys that are going to be willing to throw for real in the offseason. You generally won't get that till spring training when you start doing live batting practice against your own guys. And that's why it's difficult, right? It's why one of the reasons why it's so hard to make changes and get better in the offseason, because you can work on drills, you can face velocity on a machine. You know, they have these new, have you seen these? The new pitching machines that will imitate major league pitchers? So there's a video screen up there.
Fun.
Yeah, and you can plug in, let's say, I'll just go with a retired player. You say you want to face Randy Johnson. So the machine will adjust so that the pitches come out the way that they would from Randy Johnson. Or you could set them up and say, we're gonna face Lance Lynn today as we're hitting in the cage. And the fastball will spin like Lance Lynn's, the slider will spin like his. So they have that tech, but it's still not the same as seeing it real deal.
So we don't have pitching or hitting labs?
Not to the same level that some other places do, and certainly not to the level that they need to be.
Would you expect that to be by next year?
Boy, it's hard to do that stuff so fast. I mean, they're definitely, I'm sure, like, if I had to try to scout out what's going to happen once the regular season is over, the Cardinals will do their normal end of season stuff, right? They'll address the media. They'll have their internal meetings. Eventually, I would think even during the playoffs, before the playoffs are over, they'll start to talk about whatever changes they're going to make. I mean, there will be a new director of player development. Gary LaRocque's retiring, so there's going to be a new guy in that place. There are all kinds of rumors about what Mo's role is going to be. Is he going to stay exactly what he's doing? Is there going to be some kind of change? Is Chaim Bloom going to be? So we don't know yet what all that's going to be, but I'm sure that'll be clarified shortly after the year. And I'm sure in that we're going to hear, we're going to be focusing on infrastructure or, you know, technology or hiring new minds, because one of the things that they're not doing well enough that other teams are doing well is fixing players at the major league level. Like, okay, this is working, this isn't working, this isn't working. How do we get to what's working more often? And like, you can see that with Miles Michaelis. And I'm going to do a video about that leading into the Cleveland series about Miles specifically. But like, these are and then that comes into, that's at the major league level, but you got to do the same thing at the minor league level.
So to what extent, when the Cardinals play their last game, are they allowed to just go about their way?
Oh, they're, as soon as the season's over, they'll have an exit meeting. You're free as bird. Do what you want.
And then other than if you want to be in contact, nothing until spring training?
Well, it depends. Like, so the younger you are, the more control the team is going to exert over you, right? So if you're a AA player and the team comes to you and says, here's what we want you to work on this offseason, you're going to do that because they control your future. If you're a veteran major league player, they can suggest things to you, but you still have all the freedom in the world because you have a guaranteed contract and you've got a track record. Like, no, thank you. I'm going to do it my way because my way has gotten me to this point. There's a wide range of things.
Do most players take a few weeks off without even picking up a ball?
Oh, a lot of them way more than that. A lot of veteran players don't even start seriously doing things until January. But I would say December at the earliest for people that are at and around the major league levels. Now, some of the younger guys, they're going to go straight to the Arizona Fall League and they're going to get more experience, and then they'll take a month off and then get back to it. But young developing players probably don't take more than a month off Like maybe 2 weeks of just pure recovery, and then you start working out, getting stronger. You'll swing a bat, but maybe not too seriously, or you'll start playing catch but not throwing bullpens. And then about a month before spring training, you'll start to really see guys kick it in with stuff like that. But you got to take some break. You got to give your body a chance to kind of heal up and get back to normal. But even if you're young and, you know, like you're gung-ho and all that, I mean, you still do need time down to recover and rest. Which is hard, though, because, you know, you're like, I'm this close. Mm-hmm. And if I make these changes, the more time I put on those changes, I could be there. But then if you get hurt.
Does the team have to okay everything you do?
No.
So you can go work out with a private coach?
Especially a major leaguer. They can do what they want. And the younger guys probably are going to be a little more cautious. But no, they can go to Driveline if they want to go to a hitting lab somewhere else. They can go back to their old college coach. They can work with their dad. They can really do any of those things they want to. Yeah.
That's kind of surprising.
In the offseason. Well,
I would just think that teams would exert more control, I guess.
They don't have it. You know,
I thought they would have it.
Yeah, they don't have that kind of control in the offseason. And they also don't have the staffing and facilities and all of that to manage every single player like that. Like, when you think about it, what they're doing with a team, you've got a coaching staff, whatever, manager, hitting coach, pitching coach, base coaches, for 25, 26 guys. Well, then when they bust off individually and they all scatter all across to the country to go home, well, you don't have the ability to control all of that. So you do have to kind of, you give them a program. You say, this is what you need to get better at if you want to advance in our system. And here's an idea of how you can do that. If up to them, whether they follow it completely or not. But the truth is they have to please the team or they're not going to move up in the organization.
250 DGS. We are going to be replaying our interviews with the candidates for the governorship, and we have interviewed all of them now. Interviewed Crystal Quaid yesterday, and we're going to play Lucas Kuntz for you coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. What the hell's a Mudang?
Mudang! Okay, so Mudang is a baby hippo.
The embodiment of awesome.
Who has taken over the whole universe. I'll find you some Mudang pictures here.
What does Mudang do?
Well,
funny, silly baby hippo stuff.
Bounces all over the place. I believe bouncy pig is what Mudang means in Thai, where Mudang is from. There's a picture.
Yeah, he's cute.
For example, she, Dave.
She, sorry.
She's hard cute. To tell.
There's her. She loves to play.
Hippos are hippos. Dad named her.
She loves to play with water. She loves to cause problems for the zookeeper. She bites a lot of stuff, even though she don't really got much teethers.
She's slippery.
She's slippery. She wiggles all over the place. She bounces all over the place.
Yeah, and she's a pygmy hippo, right?
A pygmy hippo, which I guess just means
they're smaller.
Hippo.
There are other differences, but like,
her mommy doesn't seem to be that huge.
No, there's a big difference there. But what I'm not sure is, are the pygmy hippos as aggressive as the regular ones? Because the regular ones, woo!
Mudang is incredibly aggressive. Now, it doesn't...
It's cute because she's little.
She doesn't have teeth, and she's the size of a football, so it's not really scary. But Mudang is kind of like... will walk up to like the zookeeper and just really chomp down on the zookeeper. And it's like all in good fun, but
in fairness, puppies do that too.
I do think to myself, like, if Mudang was a little bigger, this wouldn't be so cute and funny.
But the mama's not doing that.
No.
Which tells me it's more juvenile behavior as opposed to like... This is a really aggressive, because I don't think that pygmy hippos are as aggressive as the real ones, the big ones. The full-size ones, they're the most dangerous animal in the wild, right?
They kill the most, I think they have the highest kill count of like
besides animals. Mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I guess that makes sense, though, because there's jillions of them.
Mm-hmm. But pigs kill lots of people, too.
Pigs?
Yeah, pigs have a high kill count.
They do?
I believe so. Boy, the way that you two are looking at me... is making me think.
Can't remember the last time I heard of a pig killing somebody.
Do pigs have a high kill count?
Yeah, that's what you want to be Googling.
Yeah.
Wild pigs kill more people than sharks.
Well, yeah, so, because we don't live in the water.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Now, that's not pigs. Those are the wild boars, the wild pigs. Those are dangerous. They're big, they're mean, they're aggressive, they bite.
Yeah, bacon oinkers aren't hurting anybody.
Like, regular piggies can be, I'm sure. They're big, they can hurt you, but they're not, like, typically aggressive, right?
I guess I never thought of a difference between the wild pigs and the regular pigs.
You're really lacking detail on this topic.
look.
Do your research, Andrew.
All of my spare time has been spent.
He did his research in front of us.
after I said the thing. All of my spare time has been spent researching Mudang, so I have not been researching wild hogs. So I got to have my Mudang.
I did my research. Apparently, the pygmy hippos are generally calm and not dangerous to humans. They can be if you do something to them, but they're not like the regular old hippos out there that are super aggressive.
If we bred the pygmy hippos, or if it happened naturally in nature.
I think it was a natural thing, because they're from a different part of the world, if I understand it right.
Which is weird that hippos would have evolved in two different places, because hippos are such a like unique thing, right? Big purple pig monsters.
Right, but there was a time when all the lands were connected, Andrew, and it could have been way far back.
I was going to say that.
I do not know a damn thing about the evolution of hippos.
There were prehistoric hippos, though. I know that much. That much I know for a fact.
Yeah,
I used to see them in my picture books.
Really? What were they called? Prehistoric hippos?
Old-timey hippo.
Old-timey.
Grandpa hippo.
There was a Kenyapotamus, an Archaeopotamus. So they have common ancestors, I guess, is the whole point.
I'm thinking of Archaeopotamus.
Hippopotamus antiquus.
That one, too. I mean, who doesn't?
There's the ancient hippo ancestor. That's all it's called.
It's just what it's called.
Can you imagine? I mean, modern humans with our brains were battling these things. Saber-toothed tigers and woolly mammoths.
Probably
and
more likely
giant sloths.
More likely avoiding them as often as possible, right?
Yeah, if I recall from the old picture books, those things were pretty big.
You and your picture books.
All of those things were bigger back in the day, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the saber-toothed tigers were like the size of what, like a small horse?
Whoa.
Oh, it's not like regular tigers now are small. They're gigantic.
And big horses were the size of small tigers. It was a mixed up time. So confusing.
And they all hung out together and had parties.
Mm-hmm. 250 DGS, we are going to be replaying our interviews with the candidates for the governorship, and we have interviewed all of them now, interviewed Crystal Quaid yesterday, and we're going to play Lucas Kuntz for you coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. What the hell's a Mudang?
Mudang! Okay, so Mudang is a baby hippo.
The embodiment of awesome.
Who has taken over the whole universe. I'll find you some Mudang pictures here.
What does Mudang do?
Funny, silly baby hippo stuff.
Bounces all over the place. I believe bouncy pig is what Mudang means in Thai, where Mudang is from. There's a picture.
Yeah, he's cute.
For example, she, Dave.
She, sorry.
She's hard to tell.
There's her. She loves to play.
Hippos are hippos. Dad named her.
She loves to play with water. She loves to cause problems for the zookeeper. She bites a lot of stuff, even though she don't really got much teethers.
She's slippery.
She's slippery. She wiggles all over the place. She bounces all over the place.
Yeah, and she's a pygmy hippo, right?
A pygmy hippo, yeah. Which I guess just means
smaller hippo.
There are other differences,
but like, yeah.
Her mommy doesn't seem to be that huge.
No, there's a big difference there. But what I'm not sure is, are the pygmy hippos as aggressive as the regular ones? Because the regular ones, woo!
Mudang is incredibly aggressive. Now, it doesn't...
It's cute because she's little.
She doesn't have teeth, and right. She's the size of a football, so it's not really scary. But Mudang is kind of like... will walk up to like the zookeeper and just really chomp down on the zookeeper. And it's like all in good fun, but
in fairness,
puppies do
that too.
I do think to myself, like, if Mudang was a little bigger, this wouldn't be so cute and funny.
But the mama's not doing that.
No.
Which tells me it's more juvenile behavior as opposed to like, this is a really aggressive, because I don't think that pygmy hippos are as aggressive as the real ones, the big ones, the full size ones. They're the most dangerous animal in the wild, right?
They kill the most. I think they have the highest kill count of like
besides mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I guess that makes sense though, because there's jillions of them.
Mm-hmm. But pigs kill lots of people too.
Pigs?
Yeah, pigs have a high kill count.
They do?
I believe so. Boy, the way that you two are looking at me is making me think.
Can't remember the last time I heard of a pig killing somebody.
Do pigs have a high kill count?
Yeah, that's what you want to be Googling.
Yeah.
Wild pigs kill more people than sharks.
Well, yeah, so, because we don't live in the water.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Now, that's not pigs. Those are the wild boars, the wild pigs. Those are dangerous. They're big, they're mean, they're aggressive, they bite.
Yeah, bacon oinkers aren't hurting anybody.
Like, regular piggies can be, I'm sure, they're big, they can hurt you, but they're not, like, typically aggressive, right?
I guess I never thought of a difference between the wild pigs and the regular pigs.
You're really lacking detail on this topic.
look.
Do your research, Andrew.
All of my spare time has been spent.
He did his research in front of us.
After I said the thing, all of my spare time has been spent researching Mudang. So I have not been researching wild hogs. I got to have my Mudang.
I did my research. Apparently, the pygmy hippos are generally calm and not dangerous to humans. They can be if you do something to them, but they're not like the regular old hippos out there that are super aggressive.
If we bred the pygmy hippos, or if it happened naturally in nature.
I think it was a natural thing because they're from a different part of the world, if I understand it right.
Which is weird that hippos would have evolved in two different places because hippos are such a like unique thing, right? Big purple pig monsters.
Right, but there was a time when all the lands were connected, Andrew, and it could have been way far back.
I was going to say that.
I do not know a damn thing about the evolution of hippos.
There were prehistoric hippos, though. I know that much. That much I know for a fact.
Yeah,
I used to see them in my picture books.
Really? What were they called? Prehistoric hippos?
Old-timey hippo.
Old-timey.
Grandpa hippo.
There was a Kenyapotamus, an Archaeopotamus. So they have common ancestors, I guess, is the whole point.
I'm thinking of Archaeopotamus.
Hippopotamus antiquus.
That one, too. I mean, who doesn't?
There's the ancient hippo ancestor. That's all it's called.
It's just what it's called.
Can you imagine? I mean, modern humans with our brains were battling these things. Saber-toothed tigers and woolly mammoths.
Probably
and
more likely
giant sloths.
More likely avoiding them as often as possible, right?
Yeah, if I recall from the old picture books, those things were pretty big.
You and your picture books.
All of those things were bigger back in the day, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the saber-toothed tigers were like the size of what, like a small horse?
Whoa.
Oh, it's not like regular tigers now are small, they're gigantic.
And big horses were the size of small tigers. It was a mixed up time. So confusing.
And they all hung out together and had parties.
Mm-hmm.